So I want to start by asking a question, and I want you to actually raise your hand in response. How many of you have ever had a day where you really wanted to give up, where it seemed as though the whole world was against you? It seemed like everything that you did, everything that could go wrong, did go wrong. You found yourself discouraged and frustrated, maybe angry. If you're honest, all you wanted to do was kind of go off on your own and hide. Get away from everybody and everything. Avoid the world and all of its problems. And most of you raised your hand as we went. Okay? Right? We've got some bad days. And sometimes we couldn't even explain why the day was so terrible, but we just know for one reason or another, today sucks and I hate everything. Sometimes you feel that way. Psalm 31 is a song. That's what the Psalms are. They're songs. And it's written by King David. And he's writing it during one of those kind of days. One of those days where everything seems terrible. Everything seems like a good reason to give up. And we don't know exactly when this was written. There's a lot of scholars who they want to try to debate and argue about when this was written. If you have ever read the books of 1 and 2 Samuel, you know a little bit about David's life, and you know he had lots of bad days. He had lots of reasons to be discouraged. At one point, God selects him to be king, but it's not yet time for him to be king, so he's faithfully serving and following and loving and taking care of the current king, King Saul. Does nothing bad to him, and you know what Saul does? Tries to kill him, turns against him, hates him, rejects him. There's another time where King David's own son, many years later, his own son turns against him and tries to take his kingdom away from him. So there's lots of days that this could have been, but the Bible doesn't tell us when it is. And there's one pastor named Charles Spurgeon, and he says this, which I think is interesting. He says, it's perhaps a good thing that we have no sure season when David wrote this psalm. Or else, we might be so busy applying it to David's life and his circumstances and his situation that we fail to apply it to our own. So his point is, we don't really know what day it was. We don't know exactly what was happening, but we still can learn from it, and we still can apply it to ourselves, the words of David here, to our own experiences. And that's our goal for today. We're not really going to look at this verse by verse. You guys, there's no visitors here. You know how we do church. We usually work our way through a chapter. We explain, not whole chapters. That we work our way through books line by line. And we do that on purpose because we don't want to miss anything. And we don't want to skip the hard parts. And we don't want to avoid the things that some people might like to avoid or get rid of. So we usually just go verse by verse and explain it. But the Psalms are songs, as I said. And if you've ever listened to a song, you can't really explain a song word by word or line by line, because there's themes and there's messages and there are ideas that are all intermixed and woven within each other. So what I want to do instead is we're going to read the whole thing all at once. It's 24 verses. And then after that, we'll kind of look at some specific things that stick out. So first, let's read all of this to get some context and to see the whole picture. Psalm 31. You may have a title, The Lord, a Fortress in Adversity. To the chief musician, a psalm of David. So in verse 1, it says, in you, O Lord, I put my trust. Let me never be ashamed. Deliver me in your righteousness. Bow down your ear to me. Deliver me speedily. Be my rock of refuge, a fortress of defense to save me. For you are my rock, my fortress. Therefore, for your name's sake, lead me and guide me. Pull me out of the net which they have secretly laid for me. For you are my strength. Into your hand I commit my spirit. You have redeemed me, O Lord, God of truth. I have hated those who regard useless idols, but I trust in the Lord. I will be glad and rejoice in your mercy, for you have considered my trouble. You have known my soul in adversity, and you have not shut me up into the hand of the enemy. You have set my feet in a wide space. Have mercy on me, O Lord, for I am in trouble. My eye wastes away with grief. Yes, my soul and my body, for my life is spent with grief, and my years with sighing. My strength fails because of my iniquity, and my bones, they waste away. I am a reproach among all my enemies, especially among my neighbors, and I am repulsive to my acquaintances. Those who see me outside, they flee from me. I am forgotten, like a dead man out of mind. I'm like a broken vessel, for I hear the slander of many. Fear is on every side. Well, they take counsel together against me. They scheme to take away my life. But as for me, I trust in you, O Lord. I say, you are my God. My times are in your hands. Deliver me from the hand of my enemies and from those who persecute me. Make your face shine upon your servant. Save me for your mercy's sake. Do not let me be ashamed, O Lord, for I have called upon you. Let the wicked be ashamed. Let them be silent in the grave. Let the lying lips be put to silence, which speak insolent things proudly and contemptuously against the righteous. Oh, how great is your goodness, which you have laid up for those who fear you, which you have prepared for those who trust in you. In the presence of the sons of men, you shall hide them in the secret place of your presence from the plots of men. You shall keep them secretly in a pavilion from the strife of tongues. Blessed be the Lord, for he has shown me his marvelous kindness in a strong city. For I said in my haste, I am cut off from before your eyes. Nevertheless, you heard the voice of my supplications when I cried out to you. Oh, love the Lord, all you saints, for the Lord preserves the faithful, and he fully repays the proud person. Be of good courage, and he shall strengthen your heart, all you who hope in the Lord.
No, let me have that. You don't know what you're doing.
Some psalms you read, and if I'm honest, when you read them, as someone who's now going to teach them and explain them, my fear is that I don't want to take anything away from such a psalm. Because if you really understand what this psalm is saying, you know, this is a pretty epic song. It's like when an original band has a really good song, and it's impressive, and everyone thinks, you know, this is the best thing ever. And then some cover band that doesn't have much talent or skill is like, let me show you my version. And what do? They kind of ruin it. It's like, yeah, you should stick with the original. They do it better than you. If we understood this fully, it speaks for itself. It speaks for itself. But what I want to do is see, what does this mean to us? What does this mean to us? And the question that this psalm really brings to mind is the idea of, who is it that you trust in? Right? Who is it that you trust in? And over, David says, I trust in the Lord. I trust in the Lord. So when you have those days that we talked about, when everything seems terrible, when you want to give up, when you, if you gave in, would just run away, where do you turn? Where do you find strength to keep going when everything in you wants to give up? And of course, here you are at church on a Sunday. So we all know, where do we go? We go to God. But the question is, do you really trust in God? Do you really trust in God, or do you just say that you should? You know what's really interesting? In America, all of the money that we have has one phrase written on it. Does anyone know what it is? Besides Chelsea? It says, in God we trust. Which is really stupid, because most Americans don't trust in God. What do they actually trust in? The money that says, in God we trust. So we know we should trust God. You're at church. I know you all. You all know we're supposed to trust God. But when things are bad, do you still trust him? Is he who you run to? Is he who you find confidence in? Verse 1, David says, in you, O Lord, I put my trust. In you, O Lord, I put my trust. So in this psalm, there's lots of things that we're going to see about those who trust in the Lord. Okay, we're going to see a lot of things about those who trust in the Lord, and I want to look at them. There's seven of them, and just to make it easier for you to maybe remember, they're all going to start with the letter D. So, first we see this despair and distress. Not a happy start, but you can't avoid it. You read the psalm, and where is David? He's in some severe despair and distress. When you read the psalm, you see the word trouble over and over, the word I'm in this troubled situation. The word trouble is the same word that's translated distress in other versions of the Bible. So that means that those who trust in God are not and will not escape all of the despair and distress. Even if you trust in the Lord, you will still find times that seem rather distressing, rather troubling, despairing, depressing, difficult. So again, we don't know what led to this in David's life, what experience he is having, but it's undeniable that he's having a bad day. And if you need me to prove it to you, I would just have to reread the entire psalm because it's over and over. Over and over. What happens when you are in that situation, when you're feeling extreme, severe distress, despair, it impacts all of your life. All of your life. So David here, he's expressing pain and sorrow and anguish, and he's doing it all over because that kind of despair infiltrates your whole life, your whole life. So when stuff gets difficult, when stuff gets bad, everything is impacted. Everything is impacted. Remember the list? Frustration, anger, pain, all areas of life. So David is experiencing this even physically. Verses 9 and 10 says, "Have mercy on me, O Lord, for I am in trouble. My eye wastes away with grief." He's like, my eyes are wasting away. Yes, my soul and my body. Physical despair, distress, discomfort. Verse 10, "For my life is spent with grief, and my years with sighing. My strength fails because of my iniquity, and my bones waste away." Okay, David's far more creative when he's talking about the pain he's experiencing. He's like, my eyes don't work. My bones are wasting away. It's not just my soul, but it's even my body. He says, I have no strength. I've got no energy. You guys have days like that where it's like, oh, what am I? Like, I can't even get out of bed. I feel like I've got no energy. And it's not just because you stayed up late the night before. It's because the situation you find yourself in is so pressing, so difficult, that it's physically draining you. Maybe you haven't been there. I'd like to say that you never will, and hopefully you never will. But the reality is that's life trusting in God. He brings you to places where you're physically drained. It's physically uncomfortable. There's exhaustion, weakness, inability to function. But it's not just a physical thing, right? He makes it clear it's not just physical. If it was just physical, I think that'd be a little bit easier. You can endure some pain. But beyond that, it's even emotional. It's even an emotional thing. There's an emotional cost. Verse 9 says that there's extreme grief. He says he is sighing. You know what it is when people sigh? Sighing is when not only is there grief and sorrow, but you want all the people around you to know how bad your life is too. Sighing is when you're, this is a bad example because it's not that strong, but when little kids are told to do something by their parents, and to the kids it feels so terrible. Like, oh, you're ruining my life. You go, oh, you know, sighing is the grief, the sorrow, the frustration that you voice out loud so everyone else knows how bad things are. It's like, I'm sighing. Extreme grief. Extreme grief. It's like he wants everyone to know I'm not doing well. I'm not in agreement or happy about what's happening to me. And this emotional thinking, or this emotional thing, really creeps into what he's thinking. Right? There's this over the top presence of anxiety and fear throughout this psalm. Even as he is declaring how he trusts the Lord, he says, you know what? There's terror all around me. Verse 13, he says, I hear the slander of many, and fear is on every side. Fear is not just in front of him, to the side of him. It's surrounded him. There is no escape. Sometimes you feel that way. I'm surrounded by terrifying, difficult, scary situations. I don't know which way to turn because no matter which decision I make, no matter which direction I go, it's all terrifying. So he has this fear, terror all around. No escaping it. And then you can see that this distress, there's a relational thing about this as well. And again, you can see it all throughout the psalm, but maybe that this relational tension or this distress, it could be that relational issues is what led to the despair. Remember, I brought up two of them. King Saul chasing after him, hating him, trying to kill him, even though all David did was serve and love and obey King Saul. Maybe his son, who's trying to take his throne, or many other situations. So it could be that the relational stress is what's causing the despair and the emotions and the fear. Or it could be that the difficulties in life is leading to the relational stress. So it could be the cause or a symptom. But either way, the relationships in his life are left impacted. Right? Verse 1 says, let me never be ashamed. Talking about what other people think of him. Verse 4 says, talks about his enemies and the net or the trap they have laid for me. He's like, there's people that are against me. Verse 11, I am a reproach among my enemies. So he says, my enemies hate me, which that seems natural. Like that's kind of the nature of an enemy, is that they hate you. If they didn't hate you, they wouldn't be your enemy. So he says, I'm a reproach among my enemies, but especially among my neighbors. He's like, even my neighbors don't like me. Then he goes on and says, I am repulsive to my acquaintances. Do you know what the word repulsive means? You're repelled by them. It's like you're so bad that no one wants to be near you. So disgusting. No one wants to be near you. He says, that's what I'm like. He goes on and says, those who see me outside, they flee from me. It's like when people see me, they get away. I am forgotten like a dead man out of mind. I'm like a broken vessel. I hear the slander that they offer. Fear is on every side. They take counsel against me. They scheme to take away my life. So again, the pain, the distress isn't just with his enemies, it's with his friends, it's with his neighbors, it's with his acquaintances. And I'm not sure how true any of this is, but it's what he's feeling. And I bring that up because sometimes when I'm in a situation like this, I start to think everyone who knows me hates me, they're all avoiding me, they don't want to talk to me. And usually, that's just in your head. It's not true. You start thinking that way, you walk into church, and you're like, you know what, they're all against me. They all flee. You walk in and then everyone gets quiet, and what do you assume? Oh, they must have all just been speaking bad about me. They're all just scheming against me. Probably not. Probably not, but you're in such a dark, despairing situation that that's how you feel. The relationships are falling apart, and you don't know how to fix them. Not just enemies, but friends. Verse 7 again mentions being put to shame, right? People are shaming and humiliating and mocking him. Verse 20 talks about the strife of tongues, what people are saying. So all of that is relational. All of it. This is a very relational thing, and everything seems broken. He's like, I can't even walk around anymore without people talking about me, running from me. All this broken. And then all of this also leads to a spiritual distress. God feels distant to him. You start to have your doubts. Verse 10 says that he sees that all of this is a result of his iniquity. So David realizes there's a spiritual component of this. This is happening because of my sin. He's feeling separated from God. Separated from God. And at times like this, what happens is instead of trusting the word of God about who God is to you, you start to believe lies. You start to create your own ideas about the character and nature of God. You'll doubt his love. You'll doubt his goodness. So what am I describing here? A spiral of depressing despair. That's what you're kind of understanding that David's in. You know, when someone's in a downward spiral, they're out of control. It's like things are going down. This isn't good. There's no hope. That's basically where he's at. That's basically where he's at. And again, when you're in that despair, it feels like your whole world is collapsing, not just one part of your world. You begin to say things like, nothing is okay. You begin to say things like, and it never will be. Like, everything's awful, and it's always going to be awful. And even those who trust in the Lord, like David, will at times feel this way. There will be seasons and periods of your life where you look at it and you think, this is not good, this is not easy, everything's terrible right now. You'll get there. But number two, what else is true is that despite the distress, despite the discomfort and the pain and all the sadness that he is in, he's determined, or he has decided. He is determined and decided that despite the circumstances, that doesn't matter. He's going to trust in the Lord. Repeated again all throughout this song, but perhaps most clearly in verse 14 where he says, but as for me, what happens right before verse 14 is the list of all that, like the most depressing part of the psalm is right before verse 14. And then after that, he says, but as for me, I trust in you, O Lord. I say, you are my God, and my times are in your hands. He says, you're in control. Deliver me from the hand of my enemies and from those who persecute me. Make your face shine upon your servant. Save me for your mercy's sake. Do not let me be ashamed, O Lord, for I have called upon you. Let the wicked be ashamed. Let them be silent in the grave. Let their lying lips be put to silence, which speak insolent things proudly and contemptuously against the righteous. So he says, but as for me, I trust in you, O Lord. Verse 1, it's how he starts. He says, in you, O Lord, I put my trust. Verse 5, he says, into your hand I commit my spirit. Okay, and when we think of the word commit, we think of like being devoted, but that's not what he means there. He's saying, I trust myself into your hand. He's like, everything's terrible, but I trust in you. I'm determined to trust in you. Verse 6, he says, I trust the Lord. So the interesting thing is, all of those verses, there's really only one person doing the action. And you would think, well, yeah, it's God saving David. But no, when you read that, what do you see? You see David deciding, determining, intentionally trusting in God. Right? He trusts in Lord. He commits himself. So certainly God's doing the protection. But we put our trust, we decide, we determine, we commit ourselves to him. Which means that this action is up to you to do. And it's not based on how you feel, because David feels bad right now. It's not based on your emotions. It's not based on what's happening around. It's the decision, the determination that he makes to trust in God, even though the world is falling apart, even though it hurts. So David says that my time is in your hands. My time is in your hands. It's in verse 15. My time is in your hands. What's that mean? It means God, you are in control. So he can say that because he understood that God was in control and that God is ruling, sovereignly in control from heaven. And yet he also says this because he has trusted and given all things over to God. I wonder how many of us can use words like that. My times are in your hand. Because I don't know if we really, I mean, God is in control, but have we given up that control to him? Do we trust him enough to do that? He's saying, of anyone I could trust. And David, he had some friends. David had some power, right? He's king. He's got a lot of gold. He's got a lot of money. He had people that would do whatever he told them to do. He had a military of very impressive individuals. And he says, of all that other stuff that I could trust in, my might, my military, my money, my friends, Lord, I trust you. I'm all in with you. So life hurts. Friendships go away. He's lost sleep at night. Circumstances are terrible. But he says, but God, you are my God. And the Bible says, if God is for you, if God is for you, then who could ever be against you? And David understood that. Who could be against you? Some of us, we would never say this because we know better. But we feel like, well, how can I actually trust God in those circumstances? Because if God was really in that control, if God really loved me, why would he have put me in this place in the first place? Point. Like, how can I trust God to take me out of it when he let me fall into it? But that's not what David is saying. David is saying, I know it's terrible. And I'm trusting you anyways. So we turn to our thoughts and our abilities. We look to our money and we think, well, I could kind of buy this, fix it. We turn to our friends and we think, well, if our friends would just accept us, or maybe if they would just give us good enough advice, then we can figure this out, then we can get out. What happens now is that we demand our government to fix things for us, like make laws, make a new rule, make a new mandate that's going to make my life better. You know, bring a new system into the city that's going to make everything more smooth. One more bus route and everything will be good. You know, one more free program, as if that's going to help. Sometimes we think, if I could just change my situation, and what do we do then? Well, if I just got into school. Well, if I just changed my course. Or if I just got out of school. Or if I just got rid of this relationship. Or if I just added this relationship. We think if we do that kind of stuff, it'll make it better. Some think, well, I'll just work harder, I'll try harder. Some might turn to drugs, alcohol. Some just turn to mind-numbing entertainment. And we go to those things as if we can trust in them, even though we know we can't. Like, everyone in here knows that those things aren't going to satisfy, and yet I bet we trust in those things more than we trust in God far too often. Far too often. So David says, God, you are my God. I will trust you. I have determined to go to you for the answer. I've determined to go to you for the way out and for the comfort while we're here. I really think that we need to train our minds and train our thinking that when life gets hard, we more quickly go to God, not as a last resort, but as a first response. If you're anything like me, it's easy. It's easy to go to prayer when everything else didn't work. It's like, well, I tried this, I tried this, I tried this, so I guess I'll pray. That's not how it's supposed to be. Right? Prayer isn't the thing that you go to when you've tried everything else. No, prayerful dependence upon the Lord is to be a constant reality in our life. And it will be if you trust in the Lord. So if you go into Him as always a last resort, the reality is you don't trust in Him. If you did, you'd go to Him first instead of those stupid things that we count on instead. And one thing to be careful of, one thing that you need to be warned of, what we don't do is we say, God, if you get me out of this, I'll trust you. Right? God, if you fix this, I'll trust you. I'll believe in you. No, we don't demand God to remove the circumstances and make our life better to trust Him. We trust Him in those circumstances. That's what David's doing. At the end of this, he doesn't say, oh, and all those afflictions are gone. No, the trust in God is intermixed with the despair all the way through. All the way through. You guys know the story of Job? Okay. Familiar guy. Job had a lot of reasons for despair. If you ever had a bad day, just compare yourself to Job and you'll stop complaining. Right, his family's taken away, his career is taken away, everything he has, his health, all of it is gone. Pretty strong despair. And yet, he didn't say, God, if you remove this, I'll trust you. That's not what he said. What did Job say? You guys know the verse? Job says, even if you slay me, yet I will trust you. It's like, God, even if it kills me, even if I follow you to the death, even if the situation I'm in is terrible, if you slay me, I will trust. I'm not waiting for you to prove yourself. I believe that you're worthy of trust, even if you don't fix it. I believe, God, you're worthy of my trust, even if life hurts. I trust my life to Him. That's what He's saying. Okay, God's faithful. Just so you know, God is faithful, even if He throws you into a mess and He leaves you there. You can still trust Him. Job, though he slay me, yet I will praise Him. Though he slay me, yet I will praise Him. And there's actually a song that is written based on that verse. And what we're going to do right now is we're going to sing it for a couple of reasons. One, it's totally fitting to this psalm. It's totally fitting to this message. And some of you are like, we can't do a song in the middle of a sermon. We can do whatever we want. So just to shake you out of the routine, we're going to do it. So you guys come up here and let's sing this song. Though you slay me, Lord, yet I will worship you. So you can see the difference in attitude. It's easy to say, God, if you fix this, then I'll love you, then I'll worship you, then I'll praise you. That's not trust. Right? Trust says, God, I know who you are. I know I can trust you, even if it doesn't feel like it. Now, what we also see here is that those who trust in God are directed by God, which seems pretty obvious, right? If you trust God, you do what He says. That's all this means. If you trust God, you go where He leads. Like if I tell you, go somewhere, and you say, no, I'm not going to do it. I've got my own ideas. I've got my own plans. I have my own direction. Well, then you don't really trust me. You think you know better than I do. So if we trust God, we go where He leads. And this is made clear to us in verse 3. For you are my rock, you are my fortress. Therefore, for your name's sake, lead me and guide me. Lead me and guide me. Right? You're my rock, you're who I trust, so therefore lead me. Since I trust you, I'll go where you lead. And when we refuse to go where we are led, it's clear and undeniable evidence that there is not trust. You refuse to go where God leads, it's clear and undeniable evidence that you do not trust. So God says to do something, and we say, no, I'm too afraid. Well, then that means you don't think he's got it handled. And we're too afraid to say yes. We don't trust him. We don't believe that he's actually our rock. We think we can do better. And this goes to all acts of obedience, right? When you choose to sin in a way that the Bible says don't do that, you're saying, well, I don't trust God. I think my way is better than his way. You choose to sleep with your boyfriend and girlfriend, you're thinking, I know where satisfaction can be found. God doesn't know. You choose to chase your career instead of chase God, and you're saying, I know what's better for me than God does. You don't commit to God's people, you don't trust him. You don't live seeking him as he demands, you don't trust him. So trust in God always and forever, with zero exceptions, requires going where we are led. Notice I said zero exceptions. You trust God, you do what he says. You don't do what he says, then you don't trust him. Don't lie to yourself. Either we obey God, we obey his lead, we obey his word, or we don't trust him. People who are trusting in God are different. Not different in a bad way. It's not, hey, they're weird. Well, they are weird, but they're different. They're distinguishable. That sounds like a compliment, right? Distinguished. Oh, distinguished ones. You're different. Notice in verse 6, David says, I have hated those who regard useless idols, but I trust in the Lord. I hate those who regard useless idols. Those are pretty strong words. I hate them. He doesn't say, I hate idols. He says, I hate those who trust in idols, but I trust in the Lord. And you can see there he's making a contrast. He says, there are these people. They follow other things. They trust other things. And then there's me. I'm different. I follow God. I trust in him. So there's a difference. There's something that distinguishes them as unique. So they find their hope in other things, and David doesn't like that. Those who reject God are led along in life by stupid, worthless idols, and David is disgusted by them. Disgusted by them. So when you trust in God, what happens is you see the emptiness of everything else. And you think, I can't believe people would do that. I can't believe they would chase that. I don't understand it. And that's how I feel, because I trust in God. So when I see people that choose to trust in other things, I hate it, because I know that those things aren't going to satisfy. And I know that God will. God will. David knows the same thing that James says in James chapter 4, verse 4, where it says, adulterous people don't know that friendship with the world is enmity, is an enemy with God. So whoever wants to be a friend of the world is an enemy of God. We're supposed to be different than the world. David got that. James understood that. The Bible makes it clear you're different. David is disgusted by sin. He hates it. Christians who trust in God, they don't like sin. They don't tolerate it. Because they actually trust what God says about that sin. They trust what God says about that sin. The best thing that God ever says about sin is that it's sweet for a season. But then you continue on. Because it's sweet for a season. It's kind of fun. It seems exciting. You trust in it. It seems to give you what you want. And then read the rest of the verse. But in the end, it leads to death. It leads to death. Those who trust in God, believe that. Believe that. But those who trust in God, we are defended by him. He is our defense. Again, you see this over and over. That's kind of the main theme of this song. He says that God is his refuge in verse 2. He says that God is the rock in verse 3. He says that he is the fortress, that he is our strength. Talks about being stored up by him, kept by him, protected by him. He is our shelter in the storm. Our shelter in the storm. There's a song, it's based on Psalm 63, verse 7. And we're going to sing that when we're done. I won't make you do another one. I think, you know, that'd just be too much to do two songs in a sermon. But there's a song, it's based on Psalm 63, verse 7, and it talks about singing to God from the shadow of his wings. Well, what does that mean? Picture chickens, because you're in the Philippines. I don't know if chickens are the best example of this, but little baby chicks hiding underneath the wing of a bigger chicken. I don't think they really know who their moms are, let's face it. But you hide for protection from the shelter, of their wings. We find strength in God. He defends us. He protects us. He keeps us safe. Isaiah 43, verse 2 says, when you pass through the waters, speaking of some challenging times, when you pass through the waters, God speaking, I will be with you. When you walk through the fire, you shall not be burned. Psalm 125, verse 2, as the mountains surround Jerusalem, so the Lord surrounds his people. 2 Thessalonians 3, 3, the Lord is faithful. He will establish and guard you. The Lord is faithful. He will establish and guard you. He protects us. He preserves us. Verse 8 says that God does not give you over to the hand of your enemy, but instead puts your feet on a wide place. What's that mean? God doesn't deliver you to your enemy, to all the terrible things that are happening. Doesn't let you fall to that. Instead, he puts your feet on solid ground, on strong foundation that can be trusted, where you can endure the wind, the waves, the storms, the difficulties that come to. Let's reread verses 2 and 3 of this psalm. Bow down your ear to me. Deliver me speedily. Be my rock of refuge, a fortress of defense to save me. For you are my rock, you are my fortress. Therefore, for your name's sake, lead me and guide me. It talks about being our fortress. If you're my age, when you hear the word fortress, there's only one movie that you can possibly think of. Lord of the Rings, The Two Towers, The Fight's Coming. The Fight's Coming, where do they go? They go to the fortress. I'm not going to say the name of the fortress because then you'll identify me as a nerd. But they go to a fortress that has a name that I do know. They run to it. Why? Because they need safety. Because there is an army headed their way that they can't fight. So they need the protection that the fortress provides. And David's saying, God, that's who you are. You give us the protection, you give us the security, you give us the safety that if we didn't have, we would not survive. We would not last. He protects us, and we need his protection. Now you go to a shelter, because of a storm, right? When it starts to rain, everyone runs to be covered. Everyone's afraid they might get wet. You go to a shelter because of a storm. But fortresses and shelters, they don't get rid of the storm. Like that might just seem really obvious, but buildings don't make storms go away. They give you protection in it. If you want to keep with your movie reference, you run to the fortress, but that doesn't mean the fight is over. No, that's when the good scenes, that's when the fighting begins. But there's protection, there's security, there's safety. So he protects us. Keeps us safe. We run to that refuge, to that fortress, but once we get there, we fight. Right? You enjoy the safety. You depend on the defense that it offers you during the fight, but you still fight. Where do we go to for safety? Where do we go to when we kind of need some comfort in the fight? Number one thing for us, probably our phones. Well, if I should be in a fight right now and I should feel some danger, but I'm just going to find some comfort here. School, success, whatever. We go to these other coping mechanisms. You know what a coping mechanism is? It doesn't get rid of the problem. It just makes you able to ignore the problem for a while. Helps you to cope. Well, those things might distract you. They might distract you from whatever is happening. They might make you feel better for a short while. But it's always only for a short while because it's not true protection, even if it feels better. Okay, even if it feels better, it's not real protection. But God's protection, the defense that he provides, is a lot better because he also delivers. Okay, God delivers. Not pizza, not snacks. He's not a food panda driver. He delivers you. He delivers you. So fortress and shelter, those are all well and good, and we're thankful for them. But beyond that, God delivers us. He delivers you. Verse 1, he says, in your righteousness, deliver me. Verse 2 says, deliver me speedily, meaning hurry up. I don't want to wait, God. Verse 5 says, you have redeemed me. You have delivered me. Verse 15 says, rescue me. Verse 16 says, save me. So all of this really brings the defense, the protection, to the next level. Because it's one thing to be defended, but it's another thing to be delivered. Imagine that you're in war. Like, imagine you're really at war, and not the ones from the movies with swords, but modern day. There's bombs, there's missiles, there's bullets, and you're in a bunker. So you've got some safety, right? Things are hitting the top of the roof, and so far it's holding up. You're feeling defended. It's protecting you. Every explosion that comes, you're still alive, and you're grateful for that. But at some point, you start thinking, you know, I'm thankful I'm safe. I'm thankful for the protection, but I don't really want to be here anymore. Get me out. I don't just want protection. I want out. I want out. So defense keeps you alive in the storm, but deliverance brings you out of it, and God does both. God does both. He does both even in your physical difficult situations, but ultimately it's not about getting you out of a bad situation. It's about rescuing you from the greatest bad situation. And the greatest danger that you face isn't any storms or difficulties or pain and terrible situations around you. The greatest difficulty that we need saving from is the sin within you. The sin that's within you. And that's why the Bible really pushes this idea of deliverance. And it says, Psalm 34, verse 19, many are the afflictions of the righteous, but the Lord delivers him out of them all. Colossians in the New Testament, 1:13, he has delivered us from the power of darkness. And he conveys, brings us into the kingdom of the Son of his love. Romans 7, verse 24, says, who will deliver me from this body of death? Okay, who's going to be able to deliver me? Who's going to get me out? Not just who's going to protect me, but who's going to get me out of this mess? And then that is answered in verse 25. I thank God through Jesus Christ, our Lord. Okay, he doesn't just rescue you from your circumstances, but he rescues your soul. And ultimately, this deliverance is eternal. John 14, 3, I will come again and I will receive you to myself. And where I am, you will be with me also, eternity. Revelation 21, 4, God will wipe away every tear. There will be no more death. There will be no more sorrow. There will be no more crying. 2 Timothy 4, 18, the Lord will deliver me from every evil work and preserve me for his heavenly kingdom. Deliver me, protect me, preserve me. Okay, one day there's going to be no more bunker needed. No more storm. No more need for defense. Okay, there's deliverance. Because you're fully delivered. And lastly, number 7, delight. Those who trust in God, after the refuge and the defense and after the deliverance, the salvation from sin, you don't just survive, but there's delight. Let me read verse 7. Hear, O Lord, that's not the right verse. That's Psalm 27. Verse 7, I will be glad. I'll be glad. I'll be happy. I'll be excited. And I will rejoice in your mercy. For you have considered my troubles. You have known my soul in adversity. You've considered my troubles. God, you've looked at all the problems. You know me, and therefore I delight. I'm glad. I will rejoice. I will rejoice. Most clearly, verse 19, oh, how great is your goodness. Right? David's in the worst day of his life. And what does he end with here? Oh God, how great is your goodness, which you have laid up for those who fear you, which you have prepared for those who trust in you in the presence of the sons of men. You shall hide them in the secret place of your presence. You'll protect them in your presence, is what he's saying. You'll keep them from the plots of men. You'll keep them secretly in the pavilion from the strife of the tongues. Verse 21, blessed be the Lord, for he has shown me his marvelous kindness in a strong city. For I said in my haste, I'm cut off from before your eyes. Nevertheless, you heard the voice of my supplications when I cried out to you. Notice David says, I said in my haste, you forgot about me. I'm cut off from your eyes. He's like, I spoke too fast. I thought you weren't there. Nevertheless, you heard me when I cried out. Verse 23, oh, love the Lord, all you saints, for the Lord preserves the faithful and fully repays the proud person. Psalm 42, verse 5 says, why are you cast down, O my soul? Why are you in turmoil within me? Hope in God. David's writing that too, and he's speaking to himself. Notice that? He says, soul, hey David, why are you so downcast? Why are you so sad? Why is there so much turmoil? Why is there so much despair? Hope in God. Because God can do it. Because God can do it. One point that I want us not to miss. Verse 3 says, for you are my rock and you are my fortress. Therefore, for your namesake, lead me and guide me. Verse 4, pull me out of the net which they have secretly laid for me, for you are my strength. Into your hand I commit my spirit. You have redeemed me. David knows that God can be trusted. He's convinced. So what is his response? He loves God. He worships him. You'll sing for him. You'll be excited about him. You'll talk about him. You'll commit to him. You'll give him your life. You'll bless his name. You'll speak good about him. Verse 23, David's so excited about this that he's like, hey, all of you saints, everyone who knows God, love the Lord. There's exclamation points. He's getting worked up. He's excited. There's passion. There's zeal. There's energy because God's worthy of it. And if you think about where he's at, he could say, hey, I know if you look at my life, everything seems like a mess. It would seem like I have no reason to trust God, but all of you saints, love the Lord. Love the Lord. He ends in verse 24. Ends in verse 24. Be of good courage, and he will strengthen your heart, all you who hope in the Lord. So what's our hope in this desperate situation? Be of good courage. He'll strengthen your heart, all you who hope in the Lord. In moments of despair, when all hope is gone, when you feel like giving up, be of good courage. He'll strengthen your heart. As Jesus was on the cross, he said seven different things, all of them important. But you know what he was thinking about right at the very end, his last words? What was in his mind as he's dying as he's experiencing the worst pain ever experienced. That's what crucifixion did. And beyond that, beyond experiencing the worst pain physically, he experienced the wrath of God for all of humanity. That's some serious suffering. That's a bad day. You know what he was thinking about? Psalm 31. His last words. His last words are recorded for us in Luke 23, verse 46. Father, into your hands I commit my spirit. A direct quote of Psalm 31, verse 5. God, I trust you. You're in control. Hope in God. Hope in God. You need to, because despair and distress are coming. You need to, because despair, distress, difficulty, any word you want to use, is coming. You can't avoid it. So decide today. Decide today. Determine today to fully rely on him. Be directed by him. Go where he leads you to go. Do what he tells you to do. Be different from the world, but don't be so worried about fitting in and meeting everyone's expectations. Who cares? Trust in God. He'll protect you. He'll protect you. And you're going to need his protection. You'll need his defense. Don't trust in anything else. Don't go into any other, don't go into any of those other disappointing things that'll fail you. They might make you feel better for a while, but only Jesus will ultimately deliver. Only Jesus. And when you do all of that, you'll have reason to delight. You'll have reason to be excited. You'll have reasons to shout to everyone, love the Lord. His works are marvelous. His love everlasting. That's what David says.